thank you for that introduction. Let me just get right into it here. So in Michigan, we have an extreme problem year to year with ice accumulation on putting green surfaces. This is also a problem in Canada, as well as many other northern parts of the United States. What ends up happening is you get your snowfall in the wintertime, sun comes out over the during the day, melts your snow on top, it melts it, you have water puddles forming on top of your putting green surfaces. This will refreeze at night, forming ice sheets over top of your putting greens. Now with these ice sheets, we have both porous ice, which will allow for gas exchanges, and then we have our impermeable sheets of ice, which will not allow for gas exchanges, can cause crown damage. This is the more detrimental form of ice on our putting green surfaces. So like I said, with these impermeable sheets of ice, we have a depletion of oxygen and can lead to a buildup of carbon dioxide underneath, suffocating your putting green surfaces. We have seen in past research that there is differences in ice survivability between these different species of bent grass or turf grasses. We see creeping bentgrass can survive for up to 120 days under ice cover without significant injury. However, annual bluegrass can survive 75 to 90 days, and in more recent research, we see that it can be necrotic as soon as 45 days under ice cover. Now, to kind of give a broad view of this, thanks courtesy to Dr. Kevin Frank, we have our creeping bentgrass here, which looks like to be okay, probably recover. We have some annual bluegrass over here that seems to be maybe coming back, not too sure yet. And then we have some annual bluegrass that's most likely dead in this region right here. And another patch of annual bluegrass that's probably okay over here. So this just kind of shows your variability between ecotypes, between species of putting greens. So some mechanisms in which the turf grasses go through to withstand these winter type conditions. The first one we want to look at is acclimation. So this is altering of the turf grass growth of shoots. The alternating this growth, so reducing your shoot growth, allocating more energy sources to storage to survive these winter conditions. During the season, a lot of golf course superintendents apply these PGRs to also regulate growth, which alters the above-ground growth. Most of these PGRs inhibit gibberellic acid activity, which is known to be for stem and leaf elongation. This will reduce your shoot growth, so possibly more energy could be allocated towards storage instead of this growth. Different classes of PGR, we have our Class A PGRs, which is trinexapec ethyl, inhibit gibberellic acid activity late in the biosynthesis pathway. We have our Class B, which are paclobutrazole. This inhibits gibberellic acid early in the biosynthesis pathway. It is also thought that some current fungicides, such as propiconazole, might have activities that could be related to these types of PGRs. And we have a Class C type PGR, such as mifluidide, which inhibits mitosis. Another important acclimation aspect for turf grass plants are a shift in fatty acid profiles, going from saturated to an unsaturated fatty acid. Now, what we have here are we have fatty acids are a high component of turf grass membranes, cellular membranes. Saturated fatty acids are more rigid, so you think of that as your butter. So at room temperature, it's a solid, so more rigid. And then we have our unsaturated fatty acids, which are more fluid, so you think of that as your vegetable oils and such like that. Now, our unsaturated fatty acids are more associated with our cold tolerance aspects, so increasing the fluidity of our turf grass membrane, cellular membranes, allowing for it to survive through these ice stress conditions. On our right side here, we just kind of show a picture of what I mean by the saturated and unsaturated fatty acids. Our saturated are full of carbons and hydrogens, so when they're blocked together, they represent a more rigid structure, whereas we have our unsaturated fatty acids that have this double bond between carbons, allowing for this kink in the structure of the compound, which allows for a more fluid membrane. Our third aspect is our crown tissue, which is the major energy storage of our turf grass plant. So our crown tissue, being mowed at, 3.2 millimeters height, is very close to the ground, so it can be very susceptible to our ice and freezing damage. So we want to try to combat those types of things to prevent freezing damage. Some current methods that are already available are golf course superintendents, such as tree removal, allow for more sunlight penetration, physically going out and removing snow to reduce the amount of water present on your turf grass putting greens, as well as drainage, so actually digging trenches from the putting green, leading melt water away from the surface. The other one are using different types of covers, such as permeable and impermeable covers. The impermeable covers will not allow for gas exchange during the winter, whereas our permeable covers will. The downside to using these covers is that they can be quite expensive. Some ranges from $1,200 to $2,600 per cover, depending on the size. So for a golf course to actually apply these covers to a putting green surface can be quite expensive. So our hypothesis was, do these commonly used PGRs and other chemicals alter turf grass growth going into their acclimation period, and do they affect the crown membrane fatty acid ratios under these winter stress conditions? The objectives we had were to evaluate turf grass regrowth after our winter conditions with induced ice cover and non-ice covered plants. And then we wanted to evaluate our lipid profiles and free fatty acid changes of our crown tissue over time. Some of our materials and methods we have here, we had our chemical treatments, which began in July, late July of 2014 through early October, and then in 2015 in early August through mid-October. Our chemical treatments were mineral oil, so Civitas 1, mefluidide, which is an Embark TNO, propiconazole, which was Banner Max, and trinexapecathol as Primo Max. And all these chemicals were applied at label rate with applications made every 2 weeks into October. So after we applied these treatments and went into an acclimation period in early to mid-November, turf glass plugs were taken from each individual plot area and then transferred to our low-temperature growth chamber. Inside our low-temperature growth chamber, we had ice-covered plugs and non-ice-covered plugs. On the right side, you see there a couple pictures of what our ice-covered plugs looked like after they were frozen. So inside our growth chamber, we had a -4 degrees Celsius freezing temperature with a 10-hour light period and 14-hour dark period, and 200 micromole per meter squared per second of light to kind of simulate what a Michigan winter would be. We sampled at 0, 20, 40, and 60 days with our ice-covered, non-ice-covered plugs. After we removed the plugs after these given days of treatments, the plug was split in half. Half went to a regrowth assay, and then the other half went towards this crown membrane fatty acid analysis. We had 4 replications at each point, so by the end of this, I ended up taking around 500 plugs to put into this growth chamber. Our experimental design in the field was a completely randomized design with 4 replications, and our growth chamber design was also a completely randomized design with 4 replications, and means were separated with fissures protected least significant difference. Some measurements we did were fatty acid ratios, such as we used gas chromatography mass spectroscopy to analyze our fatty acids from our crown membranes, and then we did a percent regrowth assay in our greenhouse looking at percent regrowth of each plug. So now I'll kind of get into some of our 2014 percent regrowth of non-ice-covered annual bluegrass. And some key things we see here is that our Civitas, our mefluidide, and our propiconazole typically had our greatest regrowth after 20, 40, and 60 days. However, we did have our trinexapec ethyl and untreated plants being the same as each other statistically, which were much lower than our other treatments. In 2015, however, we saw no significance at 20 and 40 days, but after 60 days, we did see that our bifluidide and propiconazole had greater regrowth than our trinexipec ethyl and untreated control, as well as Civitas 1 at our 60-day regrowth. This is just kind of a picture showing our 20-day non-ice-covered regrowth, so you have, after 20 days, fairly good regrowth afterwards. In 2014, with our ice-covered annual bluegrass, we saw similar to our non-ice-covered. However, we had much better separation here, with our Civitas 1, methfluidide, and propiconazole having much greater regrowth than our trinexipec ethyl and untreated control. In 2015, at our percent regrowth under ice cover, we didn't have any significance after 20 days. However, at 40 and 60 days, we saw our Civitas 1 again had our greatest regrowth. At our 40 days, we saw methfluidide and propiconazole, as well as the untreated, having the same regrowth. But in 2015, under ice covered, we saw our trinexipec ethyl always had lower regrowth when compared to our untreated control. So in 2015, these are a picture of our 20 days under ice cover, just showing our untreated, our trinexipec ethyl, and our Civitas 1 treatments. So fairly similar in regrowth. In our fatty acid analysis, we have 2014 and 2015 here. Just looking at saturated fatty acids starting out with our different saturated fatty acids of interest, we see our trinexipec ethyl and untreated had much more saturated fatty acids than our Civitas 1, propiconazole, and methfluidide after 40 days of ice-covered treatments. Looking at our unsaturated fatty acids, we have our different unsaturated fatty acids of interest here, with the 18-3 being a polyunsaturated fatty acid, 18-2, as well as 18-1 being monounsaturated. We see that our trinexipec ethyl and untreated had much less unsaturated fatty acids when compared to mostly our Civitas 1, propiconazole, and methfluidide. And this is an image of our trinexipec ethyl, Civitas 1, and untreated control samples here. After 60 days, we saw a similar scenario again, where our saturated fatty acids were much higher in our trinexipec ethyl and untreated than when compared to our Civitas 1, propiconazole, and methfluidide treatment. Unsaturated fatty acids, so our more unsaturated fatty acids related to winter tolerance, we see less of that in our trinexipec ethyl and untreated when compared to some of our other treatments. And then here's an image of our regrowth after 60 days of ice cover with Civitas 1, trinexipec ethyl, and untreated. So in conclusion, Civitas 1, methfluidide, and propiconazole allowed for our greatest regrowth. Trinexipec ethyl treated plots were not significantly different than untreated controls, and our unsaturated fatty acid contents were greater when treated with methfluidide, propiconazole, and Civitas 1. One key aspect that I kind of rushed through was our linoleic acid was greatest increase, which is an unsaturated fatty acid, which is involved in the gismonic acid stress response, also involved in the induced systemic resistance pathway. So some future research is looking at possible carbohydrate storage in our crown tissue after different durations of ice cover, and also looking at different plant growth regulators and their different rates. Some acknowledgments, thank the United States Golf Association for funding this project, as well as Project Green. And any questions?
I have time for one quick question. All right. Baker Speaker.